Here we go. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
The Linux Link Tech Show is on.
The Linux Link Tech Show is proudly sponsored by
All right. Now, this is. We're going to really start it this time.
Dan screws up the intro again. Every freaking show, man.
You think I get
again.
It right?
Everyone.
Yeah. Oh, here we go. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
The Linux Link Tech Show is proudly sponsored by Open Country, providers of OCM, award-winning systems management software for the Linux Enterprise, and exclusive sponsors of the Webmin Project.
Who's the best show here?
Tech Show! Tech Show! Tech Show! Yeah!
The Linux Link Tech Show is on. Your link to GNU Linux and the latest technology. 2 hours of insightful guests, tech info, and playful banter.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Free software, free speech, open technology, and open mic.
I love it.
Now, live from the Linux Link Tech Show studios, here are your hosts, Dan, Alan, Pat, and Link. Link it up and take it away.
Oh boy, big episode 179. The big 179.
Yeah.
Somebody's ringing dingy in.
No, I had to call T back because I had to hang up on him. It won't be the first time or the last time tonight.
Probably not. Yeah.
I feel like I'm in China all of a sudden.
Well, you're going to feel like you're in Siberia when we get rid of you.
Yeah,
the loneliness.
We got a full house tonight. We got the whole crew. We got trolls calling in from Denmark in the middle of the night. And we got Will Backman. From the BSD Talk Podcast. Will, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me on.
Thank you for
Captain
coming
BFD
on.
BFD to you.
I think all of us, except for Alan, are big fans of your show. Alan doesn't like your show.
Well, the feeling's mutual.
No, I've listened to it.
Go ahead.
He listens to it. He just hates it.
Yeah.
No, not at all.
But it's Valentine's Day, so this is supposed to be a big love fest, right?
Yeah.
That's it. No, I listen to every one of your shows, and I think they're fantastic. And I was late coming on. I started listening a couple months ago. After, what was it? We were in the Linux World in Boston, and the BSD guys were across from us. And I was one of the... Was somebody affiliated with BSD Talk over there, Link?
I saw Will there. I met him.
Oh, were you at the Linux World Expo in Boston last year?
Yeah. Yeah, I even got one of your t-shirts from you.
Oh, that was you.
There you go.
Well, I guess I did meet you then. And after that, I started listening to your show, and I was like, this is a really good show.
Well, thank you. Yeah, and I've been listening to your show, boy, I don't know, has it been 2 years now? It's been a while.
Too long.
Yeah, you're coming up on episode 100, right, Will?
Yeah, I think my next one will be 100. I'm trying real hard to stay ahead of my listeners, and there's just so much stuff out there. It's amazing.
Well, congratulations, man, for sticking it out.
Yeah.
Thank you. Well,
you guys
are the old fogies of internet radio.
You must have us confused with the Linux show that's currently not on anymore.
Yeah, well, they're the real old fogies.
But they don't count. They're not on.
That's right. Yeah, no, it was actually, I listen to, a lot of Linux-related podcasts all the time. And, just scouring the net, one of the other versions of Unix I use is BSD. And I couldn't find a single BSD one, so I figured, the whole theme of the open source world is if there's a problem that's not solved, you fix it yourself. So I figured I'd start my own podcast and see what happens.
There you go.
Now, For the uneducated masses who are listening to us that are obviously interested in Linux and probably BSD too, are there any other BSD podcasts besides yours?
Well, there's runyourownserver.org, and they are a podcast that's not BSD-specific, although a few of the hosts there do use BSD, so they occasionally have some BSD-specific podcasts. And there's another one called FreeBSD for All, and that one is FreeBSD-specific.
Okay.
Those are the ones I'm aware of. There may be others.
So talk to us about how you do the show. You do pretty much, it's an interview every show, if I'm not mistaken, most of the time. Sometimes some news, but a lot of time it's primarily an interview. So how do you go about doing your show?
Yeah, well, when I first started, I didn't have anyone to interview. It takes a while to build up steam, so I did a lot more tutorial kind of shows. And then eventually, as I became a little bit more well-known, people were willing to talk to me. I wasn't just some crazy guy emailing them, asking them to talk to them. And so now I have more interviews than I know what to do with, and I usually have them, you know, piling up and trying to squeeze in the time to edit them a little bit and get everything posted. You really don't realize how much work it is to put together a podcast until you start doing one, which is, you know, you guys have been doing it consistently for so long, it's really amazing.
So do you,
a lot harder work than it seems, isn't it?
Oh, holy smokes. You know, it's the little time that people hear doesn't reflect whatsoever all the other prep work that goes into it, hunting down guests and coordinating times and making the calls and getting all the audio set up and ignoring friends and family. It's really a lot of work.
Well, you just get somebody like Pat to handle all that, and then you just kick back and reap the rewards.
Suck down Bruce.
That's it.
Yep.
So when you do your show, what would you actually record on?
Yeah, well, it's varied over time. I was lucky enough to pick up an old iRiver way back for $50 at Staples, and that one has line-in recording, and so I would just record straight into that and just kind of wander around my house with a microphone saying whatever comes out of my head. And then what I would start doing was recording them on Audacity. And eventually what happened was that I would call people using Skype and I would record out of Skype. And unfortunately, when you're interviewing a lot of people in the BSD world, a lot of commercial software, even though it's starting to come out for Linux, not a lot of it is available for BSDs. And so it became difficult to connect people with Skype. So one of my listeners actually runs, I don't know if he runs it or is part of it, but he's part of a voice-over internet service. And he actually sent me a Sepura ATA and gives me a free account on his service, and it's actually an asterisk box that's set up to record all the outbound calls for me. So now I just plug my ATA in wherever I happen to have some bandwidth, call him on the phone, and then go to the web interface and pick up my recording. It's real nice.
That is nice. That is really nice. So then you do your post-production then in Audacity?
Yeah. And what's nice about that is, you know, I collect machines like some people collect old cars. So I can have Audacity running on Windows or on Linux or on BSD, whatever I happen to be at the time, and pretty much have the same interface, which is real nice for me.
Awesome. I have a couple of questions for you that a fellow listener and myself had similar curiosities about you and the world of BFD. And once I ask these questions, I'm done, and I'll see you guys later.
Good night.
Yeah, no, but speaking as a spokesperson for the entire BSD community, Will.
Oh, boy.
We have two questions, because obviously you're on the Linux Link Tech Show tonight, and we primarily, you know, talk about Linux. We are, you know, there are those of us who use BSD, and we by all means like and love BSD, all flavors of BSD. When we listen to your show, there's two questions. One, a lot of your guests seem to have a little bit, I don't want to say hostility, because maybe hostility is too harsh, but kind of look down upon Linux. And
negative attitude.
Yeah, a negative attitude. Is that sentiment felt throughout a lot of the BSD community towards Linux? And number two, well, I'll go ahead and answer that, and then I'll get into number two.
Like resentment, right?
I don't know. Resentment, negative attitude, whatever.
Yeah, no, I that is one aspect that I try to avoid as much as possible in my show, just because, you know, I love all operating systems. But I think perhaps there's always a little bit of that animosity towards the new kid on the block. Just, you know, the Unix people look down on the newer operating systems like Windows or something like that. And so I'm not sure whether in the BSD community, just because it's been around a lot longer, you know, some people just feel that that's the right way to do things. I think in general, people have a tendency to feel that whatever they were introduced to first is the most familiar and the most comfortable and the right way to do things. And so people have had a lot longer to get used to the BSDs. But yeah, I'm not sure, you know, where that comes from. You know, at the same time, the Linux people are, you know, half the time ragging on the Windows people, and the, you know, everyone's got an operating system they like to pick on.
But so that's legitimate perhaps ragging.
Exactly.
Yeah, no, I mean, I really think that both Linux and BSD are from the same love of Unix. Essentially, there were some people that loved Unix but came out of AT&T and realized that they couldn't afford the machines or the commercial license. And so they decided, hey, we want to write a free implementation of this operating system that we love. And so in my mind, both Linux and BSD, you know, they're springing from the same desire. So they're both good in my mind.
All right. And
I mean, we're cool with BSD. I mean, we've had BSD people on before, and we plan on to continue to do so in the future. I mean,
hey, I'm a BSD person.
We like BSD. I don't have a problem with any of the BSD people. I mean, and what BSD is, a lot, you know, Linux and BSD have a lot of the same goals. You know, we're you know, a lot of the things we see eye to eye on, more so than Windows.
They definitely carry the most important goal the same, which is to not have to use Windows to make your computer run.
Yeah, and there are probably some, you know, arguments between the different camps regarding the nuances of the GPL versus the BSD license, but in the end, I think that, you know, they're both trying to solve the same problem. We don't like commercial software. We don't like patents. We like to have control over our machine.
Well, if I could just cut in. The commercial there, I think it's a little bit mislabeled because Red Hat, commercial. I mean, I think you should say proprietary software.
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
Yeah, what's wrong with you, Will? Bastard.
Trolls is our resident licensed person. He knows the whole GPL, BSD, everything.
Yeah, I've read up.
The BSD license is perfectly okay with commercial software in that it says, feel free to take our BSD code and make a product out of it without giving it back. So, yeah, I shouldn't have said commercial.
And OS X does. Apple does do that. They pretty much take whatever from BSD.
Yep.
Yeah, and speaking of that, where we had kind of like the negative sentiment towards Linux a little bit, there seems to be like an overwhelming positive sentiment towards not FreeBSD, of course, Apple. And a lot of people that I hear come on your show use Apple as their primary desktop these days, or in the process of switching over.
Yeah, I've noticed that trend, too. It's kind of interesting. I don't know what to make of it.
And there seems to be a lot of love for Apple. And in your opinion, I mean, how do you feel about OS X and Apple's participation in the BSD community?
Yeah, you know, I'm not a developer. I like to say I'm not an expert. I just interview them. So when it comes to the internals of Apple's operating system, I wouldn't know, you know, how it rates technically. I have some Apple computers. I love running OS X. It's fun to play with. But, you know, like any operating system that's being developed by a company whose goal is to get some more money out of me, it gets a little frustrating when I get an update, let's say, to QuickTime. And the first time it opens, it throws some advertising in my face for some new movies. Those kinds of things, that's what frustrates me, and I don't think that's unique to Apple. You know,
pay to
nice
get full screen.
Yeah, it's I've got a, you know, it's got the command line, it has Secure Shell, it's got the basic Unix utilities. For me, as long as I've got grep and bash, I'm happy with whatever operating system I have.
So I think what would kind of irritate me is, as a person in the community, I'm more so in the Linux community than the BSD, that, you know, here's Apple taking, you know, from the BSD community, and of course they contribute back a little bit, but, you know, they're not going to give you a QuickTime or an iTunes or, you know, any of their other products to run on top of BSD, and that kind of stinks.
Bastards.
Yep. But unfortunately, or maybe not unfortunately, but that's what the license says. The BSD license says feel free to take the code and don't contribute back. So I don't think people should complain too much if that happens.
Well, I'm complaining now, damn it.
We just hate Apple. At least I do.
Me too.
Yeah, they're, you know, for me, I have a tendency to have a little bit of distrust for any company. I mean, I'm not anti-capitalist, you know, love my cash. But, you know, like, for me, I've always felt like I should like Debian more than I do, only because I spent a lot of my life in the Red Hat world. And there was that period of time where Red Hat had a single product, and then they went into the split with Fedora, and then their enterprise. And I always, you know, suddenly had this question about what they were doing or what their motives were. And I know they're still a pretty good company. Meanwhile, you've got Debian, which has always been a foundation. I know they're not going to try and do something to get some cash out of it. And most of the BSDs are also the same way, in that they're not run by these large commercial companies that are trying to figure out how to make shareholders happy.
Yay.
So let me ask you, what kind of a desktop setup you have? I mean, you've tried OS X.
Yep.
What do you use primarily?
Well, I could let you know what I'm looking at right now. You know, you were mentioning your man cave. So I got my little man cave here. I'm actually sitting in front of a Ubuntu Linux machine.
Where are the pics?
That's right. And the Ubuntu Linux machine is what I consider wife acceptable. The wife is happy to use that. Underneath it is an IBM RS6000 that I just picked up a little while ago running NetBSD. And next to that here is a iMac 400. Nice old one, but still capable of running OS X. And then down on the floor is an old Pentium 90 that used to be running Red Hat Linux from years ago. And here on the floor is a laptop that I use as my primary work desktop, which unfortunately I need to run the operating system that I support. You know, the end users are going to call me with questions about XP, and if my memory is a little fuzzy about where the control panel is, I'm in trouble, so I have to run XP all the time. I try and make myself do that. And that actually dual boots. And I usually wipe out the other partition. I flip between usually OpenBSD and some version of Linux on that one.
I hate to interrupt you, but have you tried Parallels to run XP? Like Parallels on a Mac or something like that?
Well, none of my Macs Parallels are new enough to have Intel chips. I'm too poor. So I can only collect the old crap, you know?
Because I keep hearing really cool things like it runs faster than, you know, native speed kind of stuff.
Yeah, I don't know.
The integration with OS X, so.
Yeah, no, I hear people like that, but, you know, it would seem a little expensive to me to buy a Mac just so I could pay for Parallels and then pay for the full copy of Windows. Kind of expensive.
Well, Uncle Steve says it's okay, so therefore you should do it.
That's right. Yeah, no, it's funny. I use Linux. I probably have Linux on more machines than I do BSD. But for some of my critical servers at work, they're running BSD. And some of that is a security through obscurity. My web server runs OpenBSD. Regardless of whether it truly is more secure or not, it's got some, you know, features to it that help me worry a little less. And so that's always nice.
And you just picked up an Nokia N800, right?
Yeah, unfortunately, you guys, you've ruined my life because you keep talking about your cool gadgets. And I had some birthday money, and I happened to be in Boston, and I was at a CompUSA, and they had one. And I just listened to your podcast on the drive down to Boston, and you were raving about it, so I had to pick it up. So I'm loving the thing.
I blame it all on Alan because he always gets the good stuff first, and then he makes me get it, you know, and then we beat on Dan until he gets one, and it just, you know,
yeah,
it spirals out of control from there.
I have to get the 800.
See, now that one I have.
Still
got
to get the new one. Yeah, I still have to get that one.
Me too.
Soon.
And boy, are you missing out, huh, Will?
Huh?
Oh, yeah, it's
nice,
great.
Isn't it?
You guys should
it's
be getting
beautiful.
Some kickbacks from Nokia.
I'm telling you. It's a sweet little thing.
We have the main Nokia guy coming on pretty soon.
Yeah, yeah. And then, of course, eventually I hope that NetBSD runs on this Nokia, too, because it would be fun to be able to put some BSD on it also, because NetBSD is supposed to run on everything. So I'm not having fun unless I wipe out my machines at least a couple times a year and totally mess them up.
So, Will, you're primarily an admin?
Yeah, I'm a network administrator, you know, systems guy for a company with about 100 employees.
Now, do you have any experience with Solaris?
Not in a production environment. I've had Solaris or Slolaris on Intel boxes since about Solaris 8, and I also teach Unix at the University of Maine in the evenings. And so that's usually one of the operating systems that I show people at the end of the class. I also have two Silicon Graphics workstations that I also show them. And we
just
do have we have an AIX server at work also for our accounting system, or it's our servicing system.
Just curious, is Solaris 10 really slow?
I have not downloaded 10 yet. So for me, I have a tendency to have a demonstration machine for my courses, and it's much easier just to leave the thing alone rather
okay.
than, you know, looking like an idiot in class, which does happen every once in a while.
Yeah, okay. Fair enough.
Yeah, my first introductions to the Unix world, I started with Solaris, and then I also had SCO, Open Server, and this is back in the day when SCO was a real product that people used. And from there, I eventually got into Linux. So I actually started with Unix before I got into Linux.
And which one of you guys, a few of you use some BSD on some strange systems, don't you?
I do.
I do. I haven't used BSD on, you know, anything you can think of, so.
Yeah, I use OpenBSD on my web server for pretty much the same reasons that Will does, and also run OpenBSD on my Mac Mini.
So you wiped out OS X trolls?
I not only wiped it, I actually tortured it before I wiped it. For example, I booted a Linux Live CD and used the hex editor to like hack the kernel to do shit and like mess it up completely, and then I like destroyed the file system with DD. So that was always good fun, and then I just like did a do you guys know of this tool called Derek's Boot and Nuke?
I've heard of Nuke.
Well, it's DBAN is its shortened name, and what it does is basically if you put it in, you can select a bunch of wiping sequences, and I picked the Goodman wipe, which is figured out by Peter Goodman, which you guys had on the show a couple of weeks back, and it overwrites the hard drive with random data 35 times.
Yeah.
Took like 30 hours.
The guys on BinRev were talking about this a while back.
Yeah, it took like 30 hours to do, but I guarantee you guys, after that 30 hours, OS X was dead. So, and after that, I just put OpenBSD. I also tried Fedora Core on there. Fedora actually ran really, really nice on there, faster than OS X, by the way. And I didn't have to reboot after an update, whatever. And then I just wanted to play with OpenBSD, so I put OpenBSD on there, and I plan to. I actually want to try running an asterisk server up there on it just for fun of it. So, and I plan to
now
build a file.
As far as the applications, the stuff that's not natively ported to BSD, you can run them through a Linux emulator, right?
Correct.
Yeah, but although not only do you have to emulate the kernel system calls, but you also need the associated libraries. And so quite often that library set represents a particular version of Red Hat. So it will do Linux emulation, and you install this package that gives you the libraries from Red Hat 7. And so sometimes that emulation can lag a little bit, just because it takes a while to port all that stuff forward. But yeah, a lot of Linux only binaries, and more than just Linux, there are also other emulation layers that let you run other versions of Unix software.
Yeah, you can like run Solaris binaries on OpenBSD, for example. But with FreeBSD 6.2, they're up to Fedora Core 4 libraries, like Bruce Ma told you, Bill. Oh, well, sorry.
Yep.
Whatever.
What's with the dog?
That would be my neighbor.
Oh, okay.
They have this dog that, as soon as it goes outside, it barks, and it doesn't stop.
They
never hear it when it's in the house.
They put the Tim McGraw cutout in front of the window, and the dog starts going crazy.
Oh, man.
Just stand behind the cutout with a BB gun.
Yeah, Tim McGraw killed my dog.
Well, I think they had the cops here the other day about it.
So about the dog?
Hopefully they'll call. I guess there's a guy. It started barking in the morning, and I guess there's a guy who gets home at like 8 in the morning from work to go to sleep on it, and the dog was out there going wild, and I guess he called the cops on him. Had the people shut him up. I said take him out and shoot him myself, but I didn't say that.
You know, not to change the subject, but just a second there. I mean, last week, I think it was, you could hear somebody's cat in the background meowing.
That was Alan's cat.
Was that your cat, Alan?
Sorry, my cat.
Holy mackerel.
Yeah, they walk in and scream every now and then.
Cat sounded better than Alan.
Well, you know, you want me to call the cat in again?
Yeah, that would be cool. Oh, I'm sorry, back to the topic at hand.
But,
sorry,
but the real,
Will.
The real question is would Tim McGraw run BSD or run Linux?
I think it depends on whatever he stumbled upon first, or depending on his hardware.
It's not a question. He runs them all.
Okay.
At the same time.
My choice of operating system.
My wife's going to come after you people. You know that.
What were you saying there, Will? Sorry.
My choice of operating system always seems to depend on my hardware that I have in front of me and what will run on it. And I've been pushed around because I had some PCs and some Macs, and so I would run OS X on these Macs because, it was a great operating system for running this particular hardware. And then Red Hat did some PPC support, and then they dropped it, and then Ubuntu came along, and they said they were going to support both Intel and PowerPC, and I thought, gee, that'd be nice to have a single operating system across all of those.
And today they dumped PowerPC.
That was another reason for like the BSDs, because those, well, not FreeBSD, but OpenBSD and NetBSD had support for everything. But yeah, I think someone was saying Ubuntu is now reevaluating their PowerPC support, which is too bad.
It's a shame.
They already dumped it. They already dumped
it.
Well, they didn't dump it. They just put it in unsupported.
And Debian runs really well on it.
And that's the thing that, you know, Debian is ported to so many architectures, and I don't know what it is. I just never had a lot of love for the standard Debian.
Well, when's the last time you tried it?
I think about a year ago. That was before Ubuntu came out with their long-term support, mm-hmm. because I was frustrated with, when I was thinking about putting something on a server, it was getting frustrating to think about having to upgrade it as often. Mm-hmm. And I really thought, okay, everyone complains that Debian takes forever to come out with a new version, but when you're a server administrator, that's a wonderful thing. You don't want stuff to change on you, provided it's got the features you want. And so I ran it, started reading some Debian books, but I don't know. Don't know what it is.
Yep, try it again sometime. You like it. I have it running on a 400 megahertz iMac over here, and it really does pretty well with it,
And the thing that's starting to frustrate me a little bit about the Linux world is that everything seems to be getting really complicated under the hood. You seem like you need, like in Debian, you need debconf or whatever the, dpackage reconfigure to make anything work. And you need the graphical tools to set up networking. There's about 40 different scripts all over the place. And that's something I wish they would have a little less of.
I see you have forgotten about the Slackware, my son.
Yeah. And a lot of people have said that Slack is Linux with a lot of the BSD style init set up and everything. So I got to try that sometime.
Well, I actually, sort of. Slackware is Linux for sure.
Yep.
And everything else is just, you know, a some kind of an offshoot somewhere, you know.
Do they
just
have
like
run
Coke
levels?
Is the real thing, you know. Yes.
There are different run levels, all right. Does anyone here use Linux and switch between run levels that often?
No.
Not anymore. Like I don't like how Ubuntu and Debian arbitrarily decide. I think Debian does this too. Arbitrarily decided that X should start or GDM should start at run level 3. I always thought that was relegated to run level 4 or 5, but far be it from me to contradict what the powers of B do. That's the way I was brought up. Run level 3 is straight into the council, and run level 5 is X.
Council.
Yeah, that's what I was used to for my Red Hat days, because most of my Linux was Red Hat.
That's the way Slackware is, too, but I don't know why they just put GDM on run level 3, too. Does BSD do that?
No, BSD doesn't have the concept of run levels. You just have a single configuration file that says, when I turn on, should this service start or not? And it makes it pretty simple.
Yeah, that's right.
Generally, it's a yes or no after the name of a service.
It's been a while since I ran BSD. It tells now.
It's fun because, I mean, there's always different ways to solve a problem. So it's pretty interesting to see this, you know, this big petri dish we have in the open source and free software movement where, you know, there's every distribution does something different. BSDs do it different. Solaris does it different. And it's kind of neat just to play with all of them.
I tried installing PCBSD not that long ago, and the installer just died on my machine that I was trying to put it on. It kind of reminded me, you know, where Linux was like 5 years ago as far as, you know, the installer and getting everything set up. I mean, it's cool that that guy's doing that, you know. It's interesting. I also downloaded that BSIE live CD, and that's pretty cool. I've been playing around a little bit with that lately.
Yeah, Nopix has definitely set a high standard for the live CDs.
But you're starting to see BSD live CDs now, too.
Oh, yeah. And they've been out there for a while. And, you know, they're just another way to check out BSD on your hardware.
Yeah, free SPIE is what I've been playing with.
Yep, that's a good one. That one's pretty popular. And those ones are based on free BSD.
Now, out of the three BSDs, which one do you have a preference for?
Well, I started using OpenBSD first, and so that one is the one that I'm most comfortable with. And so you gravitate towards the one you're most comfortable with. Obviously, I try and, I try to spread around my topics on the show, give equal weight the best I can to all the different BSDs. But OpenBSD just seems to fit my way of thinking. I'm used to how it does its stuff. And for the kinds of stuff that I do, OpenBSD is a really good fit. I don't do large server farms, huge clusters. I don't do, you know, a lot of Unix desktop. For me, the basic services that it provides, you know, web services and mail services, and their anti-spam is unbelievable. There are other implementations of it, but they have a really nice gray listing service. And there's PostGray for PostFix. There's also a Milter for SendMail that will do gray listing. But I stuck a OpenBSD bridge in between my internet and my main mail server running this gray listing service, and it's just wonderful. It just takes care of most of my spam. It supports gray trapping, as it's called, where you set up some email addresses that if anyone hits the email address, they're automatically trapped for 24 hours. So if there's old email addresses that are sitting around on spammers lists from your organization, that automatically starts grabbing those. And there's also a script that will run and kind of analyze what people are doing. So if a particular IP address is sending from a whole bunch of random domains, which would be kind of unusual, it will trap that for 24 hours. So it's a great thing. You can run it on almost nothing, and it just takes care of most of your spam problems. That's been probably the best thing. And as a, well, I use it as our web server. And the reason I use it for our web server is because OpenBSD does a change route on their Apache by default. So you don't have to go through the effort. And I always have a distrust of PHP applications, although usually the kinds of stuff I have to run are PHP-based. So it's really nice that it's in a change route environment by default. Most of the packages are going to, you know, assume that already. And so if something were to happen, I mean, you see it all the time where there'll be a script that's got an exploit. And if you look at the logs, you see that someone's done something to the PHP script that tries to issue the wget command to try and reach out and grab a little Perl IRC bot. But because Apache is in a change route, the wget binary and none of the other system binaries are even available to the web service. So all those things just fail.
So Bashpotter would fail on that server.
Well, Bashpotter would fail if you were running it through Apache. But if you're just a regular user, you're not in the change route. But essentially, it means that your PHP scripts only have access to what's in the web directory, not the rest of your system. And a lot of exploits will pop in and then use standard Unix utilities, something that's in user bin, in order to go fetch the next payload. So it takes care of a lot of that.
It seems a lot of these security issues are, it all boils down to the administrator, not, you know, removing services that you don't really need. So I guess OpenBSD is you know, the BSD flavor that has, which is the most paranoid out of all of them, right? It pretty much locks everything up, and you got to decide what you want to run, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's their claim. Any operating system can have nothing running. I think that OpenBSD's claim to fame is not just shutting off services, but just generally focusing on correctness of code, doing privilege separation. And I mean, I know, you go to their website, you'll read the whole litany of stuff that they do. I mean, since a long time ago, like little nuances of OpenBSD. When a process is started, it has a process ID number. And usually you want to create temporary files in the temp directory. And you want to make sure that a process doesn't clobber another process's temp file. So one of the common things to do was to create a temp file with a name that included the process ID number, because that was guaranteed to be unique. And so people, because process ID numbers would just count upwards, people could go ahead and create a file with a name of a process that was about to be launched. And that was a security problem. So since a long time ago, OpenBSD randomizes their process ID numbers. It's a little bit of a performance hit, but they figured can't hurt. And that's the kind of stuff that they do.
You know what I think? I think we all need to move to Vista, because Vista is the most secure operating system in the world.
Yeah. I was actually just at a Microsoft launch event yesterday morning with the big screens looking at the...
Were you laughing or like holding your hand over your mouth trying to keep it in?
Yeah, I was having fun taking notes the whole time on my little Nokia running Linux and trying to ask questions, you know, that might highlight a few things. But I got a copy of Office 2007 that I can't use on any of my computers at home because I don't run Windows at home.
Good for you.
Sell it on eBay.
That's right.
Someone will buy it. People will buy anything.
Yeah, it might become a gift for a family member or friend, I guess.
More like a curse.
Yeah. Especially because they changed their file formats yet again, so if somebody starts creating things in 2007...
I had the worst issue with Office. I had coded up, like, this is going back, like, something I had done, like, maybe 6 years ago, where we had, like, an Access database, and we had a bunch of, like, VB scripts, and out of the blue, somebody wanted to use this thing again. So we tried using it, and, like, the thing was originally coded with, like, Office 97, and we tried using it with Office 2003, and the code itself was not accessible within Office 2003. The script you could still see it in your macro listing. You could run it, but you can't change any of the source code. So they put a trouble ticket to Microsoft, and Microsoft basically came back and said, can't do anything about it. You believe that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. The funny thing for me was the presenter was talking about how if you have older versions of Microsoft Office, you can install plugins to read the newer Office 2007 format, so it's no problem. Meanwhile, a bunch of people in my organization are buying smartphones with Windows Mobile 5. So I asked them, and I said, okay, what about my executives with Windows Mobile who are going to get these attachments? And he basically said, yeah, that doesn't happen. And he pulled out his smartphone. He's like, mine doesn't read it either, but Windows Mobile 6 is out. so I guess everyone can get new phones.
Well, Vista's out, so people are going to go buy new computers now.
That's right. And actually, I think that's a wonderful thing. We need to encourage as many people to go buy new Vista computers because that frees up more perfectly good computers for people like us who like to take them and install things like Linux and VSD on them.
We just need to find where the Windows dumpster is.
That's right. But think about it. There's going to be a bunch of, you know, 2 gigahertz machines with half a gig of RAM that are considered useless now.
Yeah, kick ass.
That's great, you know?
You know what else has frosted a lot of people with the Office 2007 is the fact that they changed the Outlook rendering engine from using Internet Explorer to Word's rendering engine for HTML. And, that has a lot of people frosted. Even where I work, they spend a lot of time because they send some HTML-based emails, and now they got to go back and redesign all of them because it's not going to be supported in a new Office.
And given the recent security problems that they released patches for, it looks like Office has become the new vector for attacks. So,
yay. Gee,
now we got Word there.
Well, it all goes back to the VB scripts, you know. It's always the VB scripts.
Yep. But, you know, see, the Linux people and the BSD people can always hang it out together as long as they're bashing Microsoft and Apple. then everybody gets along, you know. The enemy of my enemy is my friend, right?
Maybe not if you're talking to Jordan Hubbard. He works for Apple as a kernel engineer.
That's right.
Yeah, a lot of, like, the BSD developers, some of them are employed by Apple, right?
Yeah, I actually interviewed one, but it's really difficult to speak with anyone who works at Apple because Apple has such a tight control on their marketing spin that they don't want anyone speaking on behalf of Apple.
So they have DRM for their employees, basically.
Exactly. Sign your life away.
Yeah, that's the best. That's like the best term for an NDA, man. Wasn't like Jason Wright that came up with that or mentioned that? Will?
Yep. Yep.
That was like great. I got a kick out of that. Sign your life away with an NDA.
Recently, there's been a little bit of a hubbub between some of the BSD people and some of the Linux people because there's been a group of Linux people that essentially have agreed to sign non-disclosure agreements if the major hardware vendors are willing to work with them.
Oh, yeah. The Thierry Durat was really, really pissed off about this, right?
No, that was not that. That was not this one, was it?
Yeah, that was the one just recently. Free Linux driver group.
And there was the whole issue with the one laptop per child with the wireless driver.
Yeah, that was the one Theo was pissed off about.
Yeah.
Theo has his moments, I gotta say.
Yeah, we'll get Theo on in the future, I'm sure.
That would be interesting.
It's actually funny sometimes to hear Richard Stallman and Theo kind of arguing on the same side of the argument around, you know, freedom and, you know, not signing non-disclosure agreements and not including binary drivers. Because I think, didn't the Free Software Foundation kind of come up with their own offshoot of Ubuntu that stripped out all the proprietary drivers?
Yeah, they very much support that. It's not the Free Software Foundation doing the distro, but it's they have funded it basically.
And now it's becoming an issue, I think, for all of the free operating systems. You know, even within the BSD world, there's a little bit of that animosity between FreeBSD seems to be accepting a lot of non-BSD licensed code and working with vendors. And then some of the other versions of BSD, like OpenBSD, are taking a very hard stance against including anything that has any non-disclosure agreements or any kind of what they call binary objects in the kernel and stuff like that.
Yeah, they see that as a security threat because they can't audit the code and fix it and do all that. Which the OpenBSD 3.9 release actually had was kind of like an anti-blob theme, which was like hilarious, but God, was very much on point, I think.
Yeah. And the, you know, some of the, at least the OpenBSD crowd, and I mean all the BSDs, do a lot of work creating some nice drivers for hardware, and what's nice for Linux is that the BSD license really doesn't have any issues with bringing BSD code into Linux, but it's a little harder for the BSDs to pull code from Linux into the BSDs, so it's a little bit of a one-way, which is unfortunate.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons why FreeBSD doesn't compile sound drivers into the kernel by default, because if they were to compile a GPL driver into their kernel, their whole kernel would be subject to GPL, which I don't think some BSD people would like.
As far as the three main BSD variants, what do you think the breakdown is as far as what more people prefer?
There is a website out there that tries to track these numbers, but it's hard to know how accurate those things are. But from what I understand, FreeBSD is probably the most widely used of the BSDs.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm not exactly sure whether NetBSD or OpenBSD would come in second. But, it, you know, like any of these, it's so hard to track because a single download could be installed 100 times. But I think in general, like if you go to a BSD conference, there definitely seems to be a majority of FreeBSD people there by a wide margin.
But isn't that also because FreeBSD is like a very generalized operating system? You can use it for like both the desktop and like high-end servers, clusters, etc. But the OpenBSD, NetBSD, you could use it for all those, but like sometimes... they're better for, like, some things and not for other things.
Yeah, I mean, the stereotype is that FreeBSD is desktop server, NetBSD is for the embedded market, and OpenBSD is for security-minded people and routers. Obviously, they all can do any of the jobs, but that, I think, is the stereotype of each of them.
Yeah.
Good stuff from BSD, man. Definitely worth checking out.
Indeed.
Yeah, you know, if any of the listeners haven't tried any of the BSDs, give them a try. It doesn't hurt. It's always fun. You know, if you enjoy the Unix philosophy and the way Unix works, it's yet another thing to play with. So I think it's always great.
Yeah, and by the way, I think OpenSSH, which is developed by the OpenBSD team, so... If you use like OpenSSH, excuse me, daily, like I do, actually sometimes I think I use it more than Firefox. Definitely go, like, donate $5 to the OpenBSD guys because like they do a lot of great work on OpenSSH.
I think once you move beyond kernel and user land, whether you're on Linux or BSD, so much of it is the same anyway because we are all using OpenSSH. And we're all
exactly.
Using Bind, and we're all using Apache, and we're all using PHP, and we're all using SendMail and QMail. It's, you know, the same software, no matter what you're running underneath.
Yeah,
it's pretty much the kernel, right, and the initialization scripts and the pieces that bind the whole operating system together is really the difference.
Yeah,
although BSD has its own user land, like LS. You know, the command to list the contents of a directory. Because that whole user land was around before the GNU project.
Yeah, and every BSD is a, I think we should mention that all of the three BSDs like a whole operating system. It's not like a kernel for in and of itself, it's a whole operating system.
Now, when you're doing a system upgrade, does that go out and recompile the whole system?
Most of the BSDs support binary upgrades you know, where you put in the install CD. But it is a much more complicated matter. So it's not like where you've got Debian and you just do an apt-get update, apt-get this upgrade, and everything goes out and fetches everything for you. The BSDs are split. There's usually the core, the base of the operating system, which is the kernel plus the basic userland parts, and that's all managed sort of one way. And then you have your ports and packages system, which are managed a slightly different way.
Yeah, BSD is kind of like separates the ports, the thing you install through ports, and the userland by installing everything you from ports into USR local, and everything from the base system is just like in USR. Very clear separation, which the Linux world doesn't do, or very few do. So basically when you use port, who dropped off?
Not me.
No,
oh, okay. Better.
Oh. Somebody who's not important, obviously.
It was Alan.
It's either Link or Alan. Link, you still there?
I'm here. It was Link.
Oh, there we go. See? We finally kicked him off the show.
He ain't get the swish.
But anyway, Pat, one thing when you said, like, recompile your whole system, I think you were referring to Gentoo, weren't you?
Yeah.
Well,
because Gentoo is based on the port system, isn't it?
No, it's like a clone or inspiration of the port system, because the port system is basically just like a shit ton of make files and like a Berkeley database to store dependency information on what you have installed or something like that. And Gentoo's port system, that's like kind of an imitation of that, but they have like an e-build system for themselves, and then they have like a whole big-ass Python package manager. This seems overly complex to me that does the whole job. But also one of the things Gentoo does is it manages system, critical system components through that portage system. So excuse me. So sometimes you'll get like a new version of UDEV or glibc, because Gentoo is never like a 100% frozen distribution. If you install Gentoo in like 2004, and you let it sit there for two or three years, and you do like a merge-u to update the system like you would do to just get security patches, you get like a huge update to both like the kernel, glibc, UDEV, etc. And then you have to run like an etc update to kind of merge in a new etc file, and for even critical system components, which is, I think, is horrible if you're going to use it for a production environment. Because imagine like being a server administrator and you have to like upgrade UDEV on like a bank's main server, that's not like good practice, I don't think. So BSD only manages like third-party applications through the port system. It doesn't manage stuff like the libs, the C library through the port system. So when you get FreeBSD, stuff like VI is like part of the basic user land, so you have like VI as part of the quote operating system unquote. So, which I think Linux thinks it should be, because VI, you know, is pretty universal. And then you have like the port system for stuff like KDE, and in FreeBSD's case, Xorg and GNOME, etc. And Fluxbox also on all the desktops. And then you go like, for example, if you go into like want to install KDE, you do like cd space and then /usr/ports and then the path into KDE directory, and you type make install and push enter, and it will go out like fetch all the dependencies and then build those and etc. But you can also use binary packages. Let's just say FreeBSD has a collection of like 14,000 binary packages, so you can, on a fresh installation of FreeBSD, you just type package pkg_add -r for remote, aka it should fetch the packages from the FTP servers, space name of the package you want. For example, like I always do package add -r nano to install GNU nano, because that's my preferred text editor. So So, yeah. And if you if you have, like, say, FreeBSD 6.1 or 6.0 for that matter, and you want to upgrade it to 6.2, you first of all, you take care of the basic user and the operating system parts and get that going. Then you can, like, update the port system or upgrade your binary packages, which is pretty straightforward. Would that be correct, Will?
Yeah, that's, you know, once again, I'm not an authority on everything, but that's the general thing. And, you know, it varies. You know, there is always the base system versus ports. You know, NetBSD has their own thing called package source, which is the same philosophy of the ports and packages system. But that's actually ported to run on Solaris and Linux and all the BSDs, so you could, in theory, have a single package management system for a variety of systems. So it's, you know, more experimentation, more ways to do things.
Yeah, I actually tried one of the other days. I was bored, so I needed something to play with, so I installed Slackware 10.2 because I didn't have the 11.0 disks, and I put package source on there because I like having dependency resolution. I just don't like that, having to track down all those myself. So I loaded up Slackware, put package source on it. It was pretty great, I have to say. It worked really well. Something to try if you don't like that minimal package management, which I think a lot of people like, but I prefer like something like package source or one other dependency resolving package manager.
It's definitely, you know, like if you look at an Ubuntu system where you can just sit there in X Windows and a little bobble pops up and says, hey, there's some new updates available, and you just click OK, install the updates, and you don't really have to think about it, and it might tell you to reinstall it. Usually on the BSDs, you're going to have to think about it, and you're going to have to do it in a fairly manual way. A lot of the, I think, administrators prefer that. They prefer to know what's going on. But it would probably make it a little less consumer-friendly, although the PCBSD people have tried to make a desktop system that has easy upgrades, similar to, you know, what Ubuntu does or Debian.
I think it's more similar to Mac OS X, to be frank, to be honest. Because it's like self-contained, right?
Well, they have self-contained packages in the packages and support systems, but also for their base system, they also have a simple upgrade, you know, graphical upgrade process.
Oh, okay. I haven't tried PCBSD for a long time because, I really didn't have anything to use it for because I prefer GNU Linux for my main desktop. But I have really been considering switching to like FreeBSD because I had some big beefs with OpenSUSE lately.
I think if people are going to try BSD, they do have to be aware that there are a lot of applications, you know, if they have applications that are already running on Linux, they really do want to check, and also their hardware. Certain hardware may work better, but other hardware may not work at all, you know, especially if you're going to do 3D gaming and stuff like that.
Yeah, the ATI is a good example. There's not any drivers for ATI drivers, except for the open source ones, which is ones I actually prefer because ATI's driver is like, oh man, a big pain in the butt to deal with. I think some people, and including someone I talked to about this earlier today, he'll know who he is. I think it's just irritating.
I think if you do the ATI Radeon 9200 or lower,
yeah,
then you can use the open source drivers.
Yeah, actually, also the 9500 and almost any R300 base card. R300 is a chip from ATI, and a lot of those also work because there's been a lot of reverse engineering going on, which, you know, is fairly impressive because if you had to reverse engineer even the actual hardware, now, Jesus Christ, that's got to be, like, really hard.
I like the open source stuff. I mean, even if you're in the Linux world, you know, you sit here and you've got, let's say, Skype running on Linux on Intel, and then you install Linux on your Mac. Well, guess what? You're out of luck. Or you're running Flash on your Intel. They try and run Flash on your machine running on a Mac. You know, unless you're running one of the commercial companies supported operating system, you're in trouble. So it's always frustrating when you see, Skype has become really popular, and it was really nice of them to support Linux, and FreeBSD can run Skype through the Linux emulation layer, but still, you don't have freedom anymore, especially if you collect funky hardware like I do. And meanwhile, if you're using the open source stuff like Akiga or anything else,
Java.
You can not only switch hardware, but you can switch operating systems.
That's right. Yeah. Actually, I had one of the things that really amused me was I could run sort of like Amarok on OpenBSD, and it worked great. Because Amarok is something, it's not that you couldn't run a media player on OpenBSD, you absolutely can, but it just amazed me a little bit when I first tried OpenBSD, that I could run GStreamer and all those high-end multimedia libraries applications that I never thought were going to quote hardcore universes, quote. So that was pretty amazing. But also, in general, when you use FreeBSD, for example, I'm a big KDE fan, so for me, it's still KDE. I use Conker a lot for web browsing, so it's still Conker. It's not like it's all of a sudden all different because the operating system underneath is different. The only thing is the OS-specific stuff like package management and configuration and things like that, that's different. But not that all that much, I don't think, at least.
Looks like on the IRC, someone's asking about BSD bringing Xorg 7.0 to the ports. Yeah, I have no idea when that's going on.
OpenBSD, I think they hinted at doing it for 4.1, but I don't know. I don't haven't heard of them doing it. FreeBSD should be doing it by 6.3. Or so I heard some FreeBSD developers say. But, I think it's because it's such a radical change, so and the port system is like manual scripts that they really have to test. Because Xorg 7.1 also changes some directories that things are placed in. So, and with 14,000 applications in the port tree, you really want to test that stuff.
Yep.
Because it's
unfortunately, I'm not a developer, so a lot of the more technical questions I just have no idea about.
Yeah, if it's kernel functions and stuff like that, I just fall behind. So I'm no programmer.
We have a question from the IRC. What FreeBSD in the IRC wants to know if they plan on bringing Xorg 7.0 into the BSD ports. Do you know, Will?
Yeah, that's what we just answered.
Yeah.
Oh,
sleep, Dan.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I was in I had to go attend to the kids. They were beating each other up in the bathroom. I didn't know you were listening.
Yeah, we could hear that going on.
They were drowning each other in the tub.
Jesus.
Well, what about your opinions between the BSD license versus the GPL3 proposal? Did that get covered?
No. Yeah, not yet.
Okay, good.
This could be almost like a self-running show. I'm standing here staring at the IRC, and you guys could just sit back and let the IRC do all the work here.
Yeah.
Because that's something I don't have. You know, I sit there.
It's our built-in teleprompter,
That's right. Well, I do these one-on-one interviews, and I have to sit there and, it's hard because you have to pay attention to what they're saying and at the same time try and figure out what you're going to ask next. So it's nice you guys have a couple. But all right, to the question, I think this is different than BSD versus GPL in general, because I know that GPL3, there's been some controversy around its some of its features, and I've never read the entire GPL3, and
I have.
While I've listened to a lot of interviews around it, and it seems that, at least from the people who were involved in it, when you hear them talk, it doesn't sound like it's anything too crazy, where they're trying to prevent what TiVo does, things like that. But regardless of the reality of the document, I think if there's a perception that GPL3 is going to be more difficult for proprietary companies, it may cause some companies to look a little harder at the BSDs. When you go into your lawyers and you hand them a 7-page license agreement versus the BSD license, which is about 4 or 5 sentences long, and the BSD license says, do whatever you want, that could be interesting to them. But, you know, Linux has such momentum right now, I don't know if that would even be stopped, even if there were some perception problems with the GPL version 3.
Yeah, I've actually heard some people to think of BSD as another version of Ubuntu. But I laughed when I saw that. That was just like, where have these people been? But of course, you can't expect everyone to know everything.
Isn't Ubuntu just another name for OpenBSD?
Yeah,
right.
Well, I like them.
I thought Ubuntu was Linux.
That's right.
That's right.
Linux was Ubuntu.
That's right. Well, when people ask me what either of these are and I say it's an operating system, most people look at me and say, what's an operating system?
Right.
So, you know, the discussions we're having mean nothing to most people.
That's right.
They're just so, you know, they pull their computer out of the box and, you know, they don't know, they don't care. They just want to plug in their camera, and when their daughter wants that game off the shelf from the store, it better run. That's hard.
Yeah, when
part.
when she want to get on MySpace.
Yep.
I don't know. A lot of people tell me they're running. They're still running Windows 97. Like, okay.
When did that come out? I remember Windows 97 was like nothing. Don't you mean Windows 98?
Yeah. What version of Windows are you running? 2003. That's what Word says. Yeah, okay.
I love the Windows numbering schemes. It's like they can't make up their mind. First, we're going to do by year. Windows 95, 98. Well, we can go back. Windows 3.1.1, not related to a year. Then 95, then 98. But then we're going to go to NT, and then ME. But then we'll go to Windows 2000. But then we'll go to XP, and, you know, they just, if you're trying to explain this to people, they just can't keep it straight. And what's even worse is that their internal versioning numbers, you have Office 97, Office 2000, Office XP, and then if you look at the program directories, it's Office 9, Office 10, Office 11. Confuses me. So if I'm confused, regular users must be confused.
You know what frosts me?
This goes to 11.
Yeah. You know what frosts me is when they always they just refer to it as Apple or PC.
Yeah.
I hate that.
Yeah, especially since FreeBSD has been like a PC, it focused very heavily on the PC from like early 90s.
Because an Apple is a PC. Another, what the hell?
It's a personal computer as opposed to a mainframe.
Yeah.
Have you seen those commercials, you know, hi, I'm a PC, I'm a Mac, and then the nerd walks up?
Yeah,
And they're like, hey, Linux. Yeah. And then they had another one where the nerd walks up and they say, hey, Linux. And he's like, I'm BSD.
Yeah.
Linux.
But it should have been. He should have looked like the Apple, except not as pretty.
That's right. Although Apple uses BSD userland, but they use a different kernel. They use the mock microkernel.
With some Unix extensions.
And that can get you into your whole other argument between monolithic kernel versus microkernel versus all that other stuff. So there's always
a hybrid.
Wonderful things to argue about.
Exactly.
Captain Picard, Captain Kirk.
That's right. I think, if I remember correctly, Steve Jobs actually tried to get Linus Torvald to join Apple.
Did he really?
Yeah, because I read the book, I think... Well, it was Just for Fun or For the Fun of It. I can't remember the name of it, but it was the book that this guy co-authored with Linus Torvalds about his life.
Right.
Really good book.
Just for
Pick
Fun.
It up.
I haven't read it.
I have.
It's a good book. I think in there he does mention when Steve Jobs basically said, hey, look, you know, Linux is not going to go anywhere. Why don't you join with us? And Linus said, no. Nah.
Yeah, he called that one right.
Yep. He's making a lot more money now.
And also, Apple have, I think, I don't remember the guy's name, but one of Apple's head guys is like a microkernel salad.
Right, it looks like Nightwish is saying, OS X does not use a microkernel. Okay, not a real microkernel. It's a bastardization of all kinds of things bolted on. But
exactly. But just on the other side, OS X's mock kernel, isn't like a mock kernel with some Unix extensions? Because I think it used some BSD code in that, too. but I'm not completely sure how it works. But actually,
but I guess the thing to illustrate is Apple's operating system has BSD in there, but it's not the BSD kernel. That's probably the thing to get across.
Yeah, actually, go to Google and type in like macOS 10, Linux, and Antec, the website, and like space server, and you'll get a very very informative article and with benchmarks, which includes like macOS 10 on a Power Mac G5, Linux on that same Power Mac G5, and Linux on like an Opteron box, Opteron server. And you'll see, like, first of all, they run, like, Apache and MySQL stress test benchmarks on it. So, during the first part of the test, macOS 10 goes, like, up. And then, like, when it starts getting really, really massive load on the machine, macOS 10, like skydives. It completely falls to the ground, while Linux just keeps, like, on, like, more load, whatever. I was reading that, I'm not an OS kernel expert, so I can't tell for sure, but that article said like was like a problem with the microkernel design, which like, you had Matthew Dillon on a recent episode of BSD Talk, and he said something like, if you're going to have any kind of real performance, you've got to have some kind of monolithic stuff. Didn't he say something like that?
Yeah, no, they... I do remember the early article about, you know, OS X not performing well. And, I, you know, in the BSD land, people are working hard at getting that to scale, but their multiprocessing really isn't as good as it could be.
Yeah, it was actually only recently that I think it was OpenBSD 3.6 that they added support for SMB, so you could use it for, like, multiprocessing. But that was also a really, really radical change. And something to note about OpenBSD, even with their 4.0 release, it's just like another version. It's not very revolutionary. It's like more like evolutionary. OpenBSD only does very, very few changes per release. They never change like the entire kernel from one release to another. It's more like just new drivers and more bug fixes and code cleanups and stuff like that.
Yeah, I would definitely say that the BSDs in general are fairly conservative when it comes to change.
Yeah.
So when are they going to add Xorg 7?
No idea.
I don't know. That's why I look on the internet. On the Google.
The inner tubes.
The Googles.
That's right.
I will have to Googles it.
Yeah, but if you want Barrel and you want AIGLX, then you got to go with the Linux stuff.
Yeah, in theory, you could run that on BSD, but that's like also a radical change. So, doubt it's going to happen. Anytime soon, at least. But with PC,
that is the nice thing about Linux on a laptop when you're on the airplane, and you've got something like Barrel running, so the people next to you go, ooh, what is that? Is that Vista? Mac? Meanwhile, if you're on a plane with a laptop and you're just at the command line, as cool as it might be to you, the person sitting next to you, it seems like so 30 years ago.
What the hell is that?
Is that DOS?
What's scary is I still see machines with DOS running on them.
Yeah.
Well, I love when you go into like a bank or somewhere and they've got some brand new Dell Pentium 4 and the application they have open is a DOS window, full screen.
You see a lot of that in like point of sale places, like registers and stuff. Yeah. But I have to say, I have seen places that do run like Linux for their registers, like Burlington Coat Factory is a clothing chain around here.
Yep.
They run Red Hat on their systems, and there are a few others, too.
McDonald's is all SCO, if that's yet another reason not to eat at McDonald's.
That'll make your liver explode.
we have another guest coming on at 10 o'clock, just to let you guys know. Pat, who's coming?
Well, then.
What's that?
Then I'll probably jet here and get you guys on your way, and just so you can cleanly move over to the next guest and make sure all the lines are free.
Well, you know, I want to thank you for coming on, Will.
Yeah,
definitely.
Thank you for having me. We appreciate you coming on.
Thank you.
And my apologies to everyone in the BSD community who might be listening to the show and being really angry at how I represented BSD, but doing my best.
No, I think you did a great job, and you do a great job on your show, and we hope that you'll come on again.
Yes, anytime. And let's hope that we can encourage more collaboration as opposed to people picking on each other here in the open source
world. Absolutely.
Amen.
Yep, and congratulations on episode 100.
All right, thank you. Have a good night.
You're the best. Happy Valentine's Day.
Thanks, you guys, too. Bye.
You know, before we pull in Scott, I do want to add a few comments this week. Another show that we tout a lot and praise, the Lot of Linux Links show from the infamous David Yates. The last show he had on, he was talking about pulling down Revolution OS off of Google Video and using DVD to put it into a format for a DVD and slap it onto a DVD disc and being able to play it in a DVD player, which prompted me to look into doing that, and I did it. Next week we do have the director of Revolution OS on, right, Pat? JTS Moore?
Yes, JTS Moore is coming on next week.
So you can watch.
I'm sure he'll be happy to know you're pirating his movie, Dan.
Is it pirating, or did he release it under Creative Commons?
It's pirating, my friend.
Oh, it is? I thought he released it under Creative Commons. I thought it was released.
Well, actually, the DVD does not have CSS encryption on it, which is I think Richard Stallman required that it not be copy protected.
I thought he might have released it. That's why it was up there. I'm surprised. Oh.
No,
egg on my face.
Anyone can put anything on Google Video. Same goes for YouTube almost. So that's pirating, my friend. I'll be happy to say I have bought the DVD. I bought it like a week after I first tried Linux. So
the link. He's got it too.
Well, now I'm going to have to go order it before we talk to him.
Good idea.
Anyway, he had talked. It's Dave Yates' fault again. Yeah. He had talked about that, and so I went out and I did a fantastic job. So I started looking around on Google Video, and I pulled down a bunch of shorts, animation, and some movies that they had up there, and I created DVDs out of them so my kids could watch them when we go on long trips in the car, which it was pretty sweet using DVD, and it was fun to do. Now, in conjunction with that, we watch Heroes on a weekly basis. Anybody else watching Heroes?
Good show.
It is a fantastic show. Now, Sci-Fi Sci-Fi was supposed to be playing the rerun of the broadcast that was on, it was NBC, I think, on Friday nights. And we were kind of counting on that because we also like to watch 24. And we decided, well, since we can get the rebroadcast on Sci-Fi, Friday nights at 9 o'clock, I think it was. We were psyched about that. But then they all of a sudden decided not to do that anymore, and we missed an episode. So my wife, of course, who really, she's into Heroes big time, really needed to see the new episode that we missed. So she found a torrent for it and pulled it down. And we sat in bed the other night and watched it on my laptop, and it got me thinking, man, it was a lot of fun to do that, just to sit there and be able to watch it on the laptop in the room. Beautiful picture quality. We also watched Talladega Nights, which we didn't pirate, okay? We actually rented that on the laptop in the room. And it's really got me psyched for setting up a Myth TV box to be able to use my laptop as a front end so we could watch whatever we want in different rooms. So I look forward to doing that.
About time, Dan.
Well, I need to get the hardware and everything for it. And I hear tears, so I gotta talk amongst yourself, and I'll be right back in just a minute, and then we'll call Scott.
You want me to call Scott, or?
Well, yeah, you can do that, right? You can transfer him over. I'll be right back.
I'm going to drop off and get Scott, okay?
All righty. So, like, is there no one else on here but me now?
Oh, well. I'm still here.
Okay. Only you, Alan.
Well, you talk. Okay. Only me?
Only you. Alan talks.
I have nothing to say tonight. I'm quite tired from shoveling snow. So.
Yeah. How cold is it over there?
That was the extent of my exciting day.
How cold is it over there?
Pete, did you work from home or did you actually go in today?
What?
No, I didn't go in at all. Unfortunately, as high-tech as our company is, I have no way of getting in from home on it because I do not have a company. I don't have a company laptop, so.
I worked from home today.
You know, schools are closed tomorrow, too. I just got an email from the place I used to work at that says that they're closed.
Not going to help you any, though.
No, it's not. We don't have any snow down here.
Was it about 4 or 5 inches here, Link?
I think it's more like 8.
I heard it was 7.
It's hard to say because there's... Yeah, it could be that. Because there was a little bit of ice and stuff with it, so it was hard to say. I didn't bother to run out there with the yardstick and try to figure out how much snow there was. It was snow on the ground, so that's all I cared about. I didn't have to go to work.
Man, oh
well,
man.
Alan, we figured that you, if anyone, you would have some kind of a weather gizmo connected to your house to tell you, you know, what the average wind speed was and how much snow there was and precipitation.
Not yet. I am actually tempted on doing that.
They just take the Tim McGraw cut out and dip him in the snow and they say, yep, it's ankle high.
If Tim McGraw is right, it's snowing.
Can you talk into the microphone, Link, instead of across the room at the microphone?
He's breaking his back with Vaxes and mainframes.
What happened to Pat?
Got the hip?
Did he pull out the tin can?
The phone call.
Holy moly. Ay, ay, ay. I started playing around with PHP.
I'm working on my plan to take over the world, and it prohibits me holding onto the microphone.
Oh.
You know.
I started playing around with PHP GTK. PHP GTK. That's pretty interesting.
The phone number that Scott gave me is wrong.
Uh-oh.
He doesn't know his own phone number?
I guess not.
When did he give it to you?
A few days ago.
Did you email him?
Yesterday it was. Actually, no. It was on the Elixir page. You can, like, pass each other emails through there.
Is there any way to get a hold of him right away through email, maybe? Did you send him one or something like that, yo?
Unless he's on. Is he on the IRC?
No, I don't. Unless he's under a different name.
Let me see if he's on. Let me see if I can get him on the Elixir page.
Yeah. Oh, well. As I was saying, I started playing around with PHP GTK. Have you looked into that at all, Link?
Not at all.
It's a pretty interesting project. It's a little confusing to get up and running. I'm still working on it. For some reason, I can't find XML Glade, which something keeps requiring or depending on. And I can't find the XML Glade source. You go to the PHP GTK page, and it has a lot of documentation, but actually getting the source can be problematic. If you use Pear, it's a little easier, but I still can't find the Glade for PHP on Pear. So I haven't done anything other than play around with get it installed on my laptop and then play around with one of the tutorial applications, create a little Hello World. But it looks, kind of promising. Be able to develop cross-platform applications using PHP and GTK. Downside is right now getting it actually, like I said, installed on machines. That's a little on the annoying side. So that was a lot harder than using DVD application to convert files into a DVD format and use the ISO to burn it. I found a little glitch, though, in my GNOME system here with regards to burning DVDs that I just decided to go ahead and use the built-in DVD burning with Nautilus. And when I'd stick a DVD in there, blank DVD, it would come up and say, you know, do you want to run the DVD creator? And I did that, and I dragged my ISO over into the box, and I said, burn the disk. And it came up and said, do you want to make a DVD from the file, or do you want to burn the file to a disk? So I said, make a DVD from the file, and it didn't do a thing. It would not do whatever it was supposed to do. It would just hang, sit there.
Doesn't that use Grow ISOFS? Because I'm pretty sure that K3B also does that, uses Grow ISOFS, and I've run into similar problems using that, where like I tried to burn a DVD and it burnt me a coaster, or continually burns me a coaster. Actually, I should say, but if I just use the command line, the Grow ISOFS, it works great.
I don't know what it's using because it didn't do anything. But if I close the application and right-clicked on the ISO file and say burn the disk, it burned it perfectly. So I don't, it's something to do with the DVD or the burning software that's the way it's built into, I believe it's Nautilus or GNOME. I'm not sure which part it would be in with. But I got it burned, so that's all that matters. It takes a damn long time, too.
Does it take as long as the Apple laptop that you had at the Ohio Linux Fest?
No, it didn't take that long. At least I don't think it did. No, it didn't.
Was it like 20 minutes of DVD or something?
Yeah. Oh, my God, that was awful. That was terrible.
Hey, it got the job done, right?
That's all that matters.
Sort of, kind of. Yeah, it's interesting that you mentioned Pear, because, as you know, if you've read my weblog lately, that I've been playing with a Pear program myself. I've been playing with Spreadsheet Excel Writer, which is, just what it says. It's a widget that lets you write spreadsheets, like the actual binary spreadsheet files.
Hello?
Hello?
I'm just thrilled that it works really well.
Hey, Scott, you got my message.
I did. I'm sorry, guy. I was off by... I reversed the 2 and the 3.
After once, you did give me the wrong number. Well, welcome... Good. Welcome to the show. This is Scott Ricker from Elixir.
How you doing, Scott?
How's it going, guys? So you guys have been talking about Linux all night. I've been listening to the show. That's how...
How
you had the wrong number.
Well, that's good. Good you were listening.
So, Scott, you were at the Scale conference this past weekend. How was it?
I was. It was great. I live in Phoenix, so I know very few people who use Linux. So when I actually go to a place where there's a couple thousand people who do, I'm like a pig in mud. So, yeah, it was a lot of fun. They had a lot of really good seminars, and the floor was really huge. I posted some pictures that I took. I'm a terrible picture taker, but they're up there. And I had a chance to go to some seminars. There was Jono Bacon from Ubuntu, and they're making me remember all their names.
Ted Hager.
There, yep. I missed that one. I got to see Jono Bacon. Was a lot of fun because he's English, and you'd be amazed at how uptight Americans are with their humor. He got a lot of hard time from some Gentoo guys in the second or third row, about a row of them, gave him a hard time throughout the seminar. It was a lot of fun.
Now, you just were walking around. You weren't, in one of the booths or anything, were you?
No. I was walking around. I had an Elixir T-shirt on, and I'd go around and talk to people at the booths and then run back to the email garden that they had and write some stuff down before I forgot it. They had a really nice email garden and press room. They had about eight little... small form shuttles that were running Mavics, and got to use Ice Weasel a little bit.
So Scale sounds like it's one of those real community type events, less corporate, right?
It's and that's their tagline. They, you know, they like to think of themselves as the expo that's not corporate, but yet they do have. I mean, yeah, Sun was there, IBM, Dell. There were a lot of big players, and actually, IBM's been sponsoring the event since they started it. So, but they did a top notch job for being all volunteers. You wouldn't have known it.
So it sounded like it was a good time then.
Yeah, I did. I did have a good time. I got to meet some people. I talked to a guy from Dell, and I'm hoping to get an interview with somebody higher up. Find out. I want to know why they use Linux and they sell Linux on their servers, but they've only really been talking about they do for maybe a year.
Well, you know why.
Well, yeah, of course.
We know why.
We know why. Yeah, it's I saw my first Dell ad that had Linux in it. They mentioned it because they were talking about one of their big high-power servers. I have no idea what it does. But go ahead.
How long have you been running for Elixir now?
I've been there just over a year. It all started for me. I started a thread on my switch to SUSE 10 from XP, essentially. And I had had another machine that I had run all kinds of. My very first experience with Linux, I bought the Linux for non-geeks that had Fedora 1 in it. And a friend of mine had given me an old P3 machine, 700 megahertz, and I put Fedora Core 1 on there, and that's how I started. And I decided to start a thread on my switch to SUSE 10, and then I just started contributing articles. I became an editor, and now I'm senior editor. So.
Oh, cool. Yeah, we met DC Paris at the Ohio Linux Fest last September.
He's awesome. I haven't had the opportunity to meet him yet, but yeah, he's a great guy.
Yeah, it's a good site, man. We like Elixir.
Oh, yeah. Every day I'm on that site.
Well, and what's nice is basically it saves you from having to go to 20 different sites to get a little bit of information at each one. And all of our links are direct links, so a lot of what I do is going through the submissions that come in and the hits that we get and basically going through and making sure that they actually link to the article they say they're talking about. You'd be amazed at how many are redirects.
Wow. Yeah, you know, the only thing I wish Elixir had a little more of was comments, because I like reading some comments that people post, but not to the point of like /. Yeah, I know, I should. I should instead
well,
of just trolling around.
Too many. By the time an article posts, it's already got 60 comments. That's the thing for me is it's overpowered.
Uh-huh.
It's hard for me to just get caught up on the conversation because it's too fast. I guess I'm a little slower paced than you are. But we have some, you want to see more comments? Comment.
Yeah, I should. Here I am, complaining when I could be commenting.
That's what really attracted me to it at first, because they have people that comment all the time that are knowledgeable, and you end up getting more information from the thread about the article than about the article itself.
So how many people at Scale were not running Linux on their systems? Because I know that's always been a problem with a lot of those type of events that I've gone to in the past, where you see people there running OS 10 or Windows, or you know, people in booths doing that, or businesses doing that, PowerPoint presentation at a Linux convention. And was that like that at Elixir? I'm not at Scale.
I didn't get a chance to stop at every booth. From what I could tell, everyone was running Linux. LinSpire was there, and they had two or three computers for you to use that were running versions of FreeSpire. And Novell was there, too. I forgot to mention that. I hope to get an interview with one of them before. I gave him a hard time. I'm like, so, have you gotten any bad press?
Traitor.
Well, they made a good conversation of it, because their main thing that they said to me was that it allows them to sell their product, and the company that they're trying to sell to, they don't have to worry about. You know, and they can run Windows and it's supported. They can virtualize Windows and it's supported, which makes sense, I guess. They're making money on it. And if you look on DistroWatch, OpenSUSE hasn't gone down any. I believe it's like number 2 or 3 right now. So people are still downloading. I ran from SUSE 10 through 10.2 for 2 years. I just got tired of essentially getting smart enough about my system to get tired of the RPMs breaking all the time. Nothing none of the entities could ever be resolved. I got tired of it.
So what are you running now?
Well, you're going to like this. I'm basically triple booting Ubuntu, XP, and Debian testing right now.
Well, there you go. Well, you know, you can get rid of that XP. You don't need that anymore.
Well, and that's, I work with the XP at work, so I'm keeping it around just to F with, so to speak.
There you go. You know what?
I'm hardly it.
What's interesting, and I think I read it off of an article that was linked on LX, or is one of the things that I heard in the past week was with that whole cross-patent agreement with Microsoft, that apparently Microsoft has been making business deals with companies and selling a license to other companies so that they could actually use Linux software without Linux or open source software without the fear of patent retribution from Microsoft. So this is actually going on other places.
It is. It's helping them sell some things, I think, really from my assumption would be from people who really don't want to upgrade all of their hardware at once, because you can virtualize Windows for probably on the same or less hardware than you can actually run it, because you can turn pieces of it off if you don't want.
Right, but I think that's kind of dirty pool there, that they're forcing, you know, a couple of other companies and keeping it hush-hush and saying, look, hey, if you're going to run Linux here, you know, you better take a license from us so we don't sue you, or you don't risk patent violation.
Absolutely, that's a part of it, is that we know you can run it, so, you know, here, use Novell, and we promise not to sue you. It's definitely strong-arm technique, it's just they have suits on.
Right. Lousy, lousy, lousy.
Well, and I was looking, I was in a Circuit City today, and looking at the boxes, the different versions of Vista, and looking at the basic hardware requirements, and Karen, your guest earlier, you mentioned, he's like, pretty soon there's going to be all this wonderful hardware that's not going to be good enough, and he's right, because one gig of RAM, at least 40 gigs of space with 15 for the OS alone, it's so over the top. I mean, I've got a 2.4 gig with a gig and a half of RAM, and I'll probably have that for a long time, and I'm running faster. You know, that's crazy to me. Plus, they want $670 just for Office 2007.
Yeah, I saw the new Vista in Circuit City, and I was looking at it, and they wanted me to trade in my 3-year-old son to get a copy of Vista. And I told them no.
Are you sure they didn't want you to include your unborn too?
No, they didn't mention that. No.
Oh, that's in the shrink wrap.
Something I've heard is that if you start out with Windows Basic or Windows Home, I forget all the versions, and you upgrade to, say, Ultimate or Business, and let's say something happens and you've got to reinstall it, you have to go buy a new version, because since you've upgraded, but you came from a lower version, essentially, that you won't be able to reinstall your original version before you upgraded it, the disk that you have. That's crazy.
Yeah, this is nothing new. I've known about this for a while.
I'm easily blown away. I'm always surprised at stuff that I see. I don't know.
I don't know. The biggest thing with Windows users, it's amazing how much crap they put up with.
Well, and they don't know. I think that's really it. It's considered, you know, normal that they don't know that their hardware can run a lot faster and a lot safer. And I wrote an article recently about KDE porting over to Mac and Windows, which I think is a great idea. You guys might not, but I think humans are addictive creatures, and if you can get somebody to add some software to their computer that you know they use and they're going to like better, well, pretty soon they're going to be hooked on it. That's what happened to me, essentially. I started using Fedora Core 1 and 2 on the side and had Windows XP Home Edition, and pretty soon it was just like, why am I running XP? For 2 years I didn't.
Well, you got to boot into it every so often so you can change the, you know, when daylight savings time comes by, so you can change the clock. That's when I knew it was time for me to finally wipe it off my systems, when all I do is boot in and change the clock when daylight savings time came around. It's like, goodbye.
And for me, I boot in and I run Adware and SpyBot and AVG to make sure it's safe, and then I boot right back out. I might mess. I messed with some DOS commands because I'm learning some, to do some stuff that's specific to what they do at my work. So.
So what's your day job then, if you can talk about that?
My day job. I work for a company that the large part of the company, they install and maintain gates, and then we do video camera surveillance and parking revenue, and that's what I'm doing. I got done installing some hardware in a parking garage and then wiring up the operators, and now we get to set up the cashier register. Remember, I think it was Link or Pat who was talking about the point of sale running embedded.
Yeah, Red Hat.
I don't know what the software is yet, but I'm pretty sure it's fairly proprietary. But basically, I'm setting up a booth where you're gonna have a guy taking your cash. It's something I've never done before, so I'm learning a lot of things at once. It's putting wrinkles on my smooth head, brain.
So
play with Asterisk for a while. That'll help.
A question came in from the IRC. Who's this Herschel, the Unix rabbi?
That guy was cool. There were a lot of lugs there. There was, I'd say, about six lugs. There was the Unix, Southern California Unix organization. There was the SC lug, UCLA lug. There was, Stan Bart. There was five or six lugs, and he was with the Unix lug, and that was his tagline. He was Herschel, the Unix rabbi. He's a rabbi. He was great to talk to. They were the only Unix lug there. They were really trying to be nice and engage people. It was cool.
It looks like it was pretty darn fun.
I got to see the spinning cube from the GNOME guy. He was running, I think, Fedora Core 6 with some extra stuff on it. And he was spinning the cube. I hadn't actually seen that live before. I guess I'm deprived.
I mean, you don't have barrel running?
I think so, yeah. You had the where you can grab it by the corner or the side and
no, I mean, you don't have you don't have barrel running on any of your systems?
No, I don't. I'm running 3.5.6, and I just got done configuring, actually, with a friend's help. I'm hoping to probably write down what happened. I learned a lot more about file system administration in the last.
Uh-oh. Oh,
he's gone. He dropped off.
Somebody. Let me see. No, that wasn't the wife's fault.
Blame the wife.
I hope. Now, he called in himself, right?
Yeah, he called in. He gave me the wrong phone number.
Okay.
I called the number he gave me, and the woman was like, there's nobody by that name.
Hello?
There.
Scott.
Hey, Scott.
Sorry about that. Hey. You seem to have dropped off there.
Yeah, I got bad reception where I live. But phones don't like me.
You were saying you learned more about file systems in the past, and then you died.
Yeah, with a friend's help, I've been essentially customizing and upgrading a Debian testing install. I went into experimental long enough to get 3.5.6 from KDE, and then back right back out, and installed all the codecs. I'm getting all the bells and whistles, and I plan on running Sedenga and playing some games and see what that's like under Linux and see if I can do that.
You have to report back on Alexa or how that worked out for you.
Exactly. I haven't seen anyone write an article who's running Linux and actually playing games and telling you, what's going on with it. I'll do that. Why not?
You got to talk to Dan. Dan also does Logger podcasts, which is Linux and Gaming Entertainment Radio.
And T2.
Oh, okay.
Trolls is still on, right, Trolls?
Yeah.
Yeah, we both do that together on that that irregular basis. Used to be weekly, and then now it's been like bi-annually. I don't know.
But Dan, at least it's not like that other podcast called Floss Quarterly or something like that.
Yeah. No, we're going to be doing another Logger.
Seriously,
in another week and a half.
It is like Floss Quarterly.
Yeah. You know what You know what you should check out there, Scott, when you get a chance? Speaking of Linux games, one, we're going to be reviewing it hopefully next weekend, not this coming up, Eternal Lands, which is a pretty...
Eternal Lands, I've seen that in the box in the store, but I've never...
I don't think you're thinking of... it's not Eternal Lands, because it's a... I don't think they sell Eternal Lands in the store. It's a free download.
Oh, I know. okay, hang on. I think I know exactly.
It's an MMORPG.
Yeah. I have it on a Linux Format magazine disc here.
Yeah, that's pretty
I get to play that now.
There you go. It's pretty good. Pretty darn good.
I'm an old school BG guy. I remember having original versions of the Dungeon Master's Guide and the Player's Handbook.
The old hardcover books with the DM guy with the demon on the front and the thief
with the
thief prying out the gem.
I still have my dice.
I still have my old books too. My dice and my old books. The original the original Monster Manual with all the cool monsters on it and the unicorn was, I think there was a unicorn on the front and the red dragon flying in the sky and the purple worm at the bottom going through the underground. Yep. Yeah.
Is there Dungeons and Dragons podcast? There's gotta be one.
I don't think
there's gotta be one.
I think there was one, but then it's gone.
That goes back a long time. I used to hang out with friends with the books standing up so they couldn't see what I was doing.
Yeah.
But I love those games. I have been playing Neverwinter Nights on my XP partition just to get my chops back.
Well, you can play Neverwinter Nights on Linux.
That's exactly what I'm going to be doing soon. I got a computer given to me by a friend, so I went from having a 1.4 gig AMD with 512 megs of RAM and 6 years old now to getting 2.4 with a gig and a half of RAM. I actually have a video card that I can render the 3D with. Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah, it runs sweetly under Linux.
Yeah. Well, I went from a 66 front-side, megahertz front-side bus to 533, so I basically went from a Model T to a Cadillac in a day.
There you go.
Good. Of course, only computers... Go ahead.
Sounds like you found the Windows dumpster that we've been talking about so much.
Yeah, and this was my friend's old gaming machine, so I'm afraid to ask him what his new gaming machine is. But hey, if somebody likes me and wants to give me their computer, I'll take it.
Yeah.
I'm a happy man.
Yeah. They can't beat that, huh?
Yeah, I'll tell you, I wish there's a few people that would do that kind of stuff for me, you know?
Well, and, you got to be a nice guy.
that's Link's problem, is not being nice.
That's my problem right there. Yeah.
See? That's
it right there.
You got to stay away from
tequila. Just don't like me.
Yeah, so I hope to see more gaming articles on Elixir then.
Yeah, I'm planning on sort of writing about my experience setting up Debian with my friend's help, and then I plan on writing a couple articles about gaming Linux. I'm going to be going to the Red Hat Summit in May, hoping to see what that is like, and I just can't wait for another scale or something like that to come by. Because for me, going to L.A., it's just an hour plane flight. So it's
where are you? Phoenix?
I'm in Phoenix, Arizona, yeah.
Are you saying that the Linux scene in Phoenix is non-existent?
They have a lug, and I'm so busy I never get a chance to go. There's a good 30, 40 people. There's some other lugs. But as far as me out and about meeting somebody else who is running Linux at home, only the people that I've known for a while that I've got them to try it, or... Every once in a while, somebody who's running Linux, but where I work, when I left to go to the Scale event, they're like, oh, where are you going this weekend? And I told them, there's people who don't know what Firefox is yet, or what OpenOffice is.
Their eyes just glaze over, and they give you a blank stare.
Well, and they just didn't have the information. They were just like, oh, you can use this other version of an Office program, and it'll read Microsoft format? Yeah. I'm using it on my PC. I saved my boss $600 in software by getting Thunderbird and OpenOffice on my computer. So I don't have to have Outlook, basically, because I don't use many of the calendar functions. And I've got a full version of OpenOffice.org 2.1. I'm upset.
And with Thunderbird, you don't get all the email HTML viruses.
And you're going to be more, and you're going to be more productive with Thunderbird and OpenOffice because they don't crash like their Microsoft counterparts do, which, costs you time, and time is money, right?
Yeah, that's my story, and I'm sticking to it. I just got done putting about $2,000 worth of software, some SQL and Windows Small Business Server 2003 on a machine today. It costs it almost as much as the hardware.
Jeez. I just shake my head when I hear that.
Exactly, man.
That's what I'm being told to do. I gotta wait till, I'm there long enough and get in a position to where, I know enough and can deploy some open source software, essentially. I'm hoping that in my time there that the percentage, which is zero right now, will go up.
You know, you had mentioned about trying out Sudega.
Yeah, I pay the little subscription fee, like $5 a month or whatever it is. And I've been paying for it, but I haven't been able to really use it because the computer I have just wasn't fast enough.
An interesting site for getting some support with that. There's a podcast out there called Games and More Entertainment Radio. It's at hwhq.com. They have a forum over there that one of the guys, C4, is into finding out, more about Linux and gaming on Linux. And he's been tried out Sudega and posted a lot of tips in there about getting certain games to run under Sudega and what he had to do. So you might want to check that out. That's, again, hwhq.com under the forum.
That's the one thing that really is taking baby steps at a time is that there's a few games where you can turn it on and it just works, but then, there's a lot of games where you've got to go in and find this one file and change some values in it or delete this other file or add these files. It's those little things that are coming along, just a little step at a time.
Yeah, there's a lot of really cool independent indie game developers out there putting out stuff that's Linux compatible. A lot of stuff over on, I think it was at linuxgames.com.
I remember there being, they're making a open graphics card. I interviewed a guy who's working on hardware, essentially, an open source graphics card that will do every, it doesn't yet, but they want to essentially, over time, get it to do the things that ATI and NVIDIA are doing.
Yeah, that would be sweet when they finally get that.
Well, that's why we're all here.
It's going to take a while, though. It costs like $50 million to engineer a chip these days.
Yeah, it's pretty darn expensive.
Yeah.
But I'd throw my $10 into the pot. Oh, wait, that's for the...
Hey, you got to fight.
Yeah, that's for the NVU driver.
You got to fight a good fight.
Yeah. Was it NuVu? NuVu Project, that's right. NuVu Project.
Yeah, look, Radio had one of the guys behind that on.
Yeah.
The ending of that was like hilarious because he was said like NuVu in French. That was like hilarious.
So any like big announcements come out of Scale?
Not really. I didn't catch anything too much. There was a lot of companies there. There was a making me trying to remember all this at once. One person I liked talking to there was Art of React OS, which apparently is a open source version of the Windows API, which I didn't know existed apparently. Have you guys heard of that?
It's to Windows what GNU is to Unix.
Ah. And also, I got a chance to talk to the Linux chicks. There's one of the lugs there was a female Linux user group called Linux Chicks LA, but it was a part of the greater Linux chicks lug. And that was really cool because that's something you guys may not know about, but like in general, there's maybe 20 or 25% of women involved in IT, and when you get to open source, it drops to like 1.5%, if that. And that's not
because
good.
They all use Macs, that's why.
Well, I see a lot of people. Actually, I don't know if they really are selling more computers. But I'm meeting a lot more people that are running Mac and really happy. When I was in LA, I was staying at my sister's house, and she's got one of those old Macs where it's the monitor on the boom. I don't even know what that is, with the looks like a bread box with a LCD on it.
Is that what the one that you can position the monitor any way you want?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that wasn't an eMac. What was that? Wasn't that one of the iMac models?
That was the first iMac. That was the first iMac.
Yeah, the iMac. I think. I don't think she turned that thing off in probably a year and a half. The only thing that kills me is I'm so hooked on a two-button mouse, a one-button mouse in Mac, I start freaking out.
Yeah, me too.
Oh, I hear you.
And I hate you.
I get tired of control.
you haven't entered the Steve Jobs reality distortion field. Otherwise, you would fall, you know, locked in.
Pat, you got a bit.
I don't
torn,
care how the mouse looks. I just want it to work.
Yeah, Pat, you got to release that little piece of art you did in terms of bowing down in front of the mighty Steve Jobs.
Yeah, we're actually looking for someone who could do a decent Steve Jobs impersonation. We want to do a bit with you. So if any of our listeners can do a decent Steve Jobs impersonation, we're gonna record something with you very soon.
Oh man.
So Scott,
I want to hear that.
You saw Jono's talk, right?
Yeah.
Jono's talk. What was he talking about? Ubuntu, or was he talking about something else?
He was really talking about. He got onto the subject of Ubuntu off and on. He was taking questions throughout most of the seminar. He was really trying to engage everybody. The name of the seminar was Herding Cats and Influencing People. And what he really started out talking was how you can get people who live on different continents and speak different native languages and think differently to work on one team and actually get something done. And he spends a lot of time traveling for Mark's company doing just that, essentially, you know, as a cheerleader, getting people, you know, to work better together. But they've got, you know, and I'm sure you guys know this, you guys look at KDE or GNOME or any major open source project, and you've got developers and contributors from everywhere. So he was really talking about how you can get a divergent group of people to actually get something done. And it's a lot like, it sounds like what Google is doing. I was at my lug about probably 9 months ago, and Google did a presentation, and they talked about essentially their stripped down version of Linux that they have on different versions of their servers. And a lot of times when you get hired by Google, they send you a computer in a box, and you put it all together and plug it into the internet, and they download everything remotely. And you get a customized version for exactly what you do, and you get put on a schedule with the people who are on your team, and they could be anywhere on the planet. Which really I think is pretty cool. When you can talk to people on three different continents, and all you are doing is, you know, doing your job, that's pretty cool.
That is neat. That is very neat. So when are you going to be working for Google?
Well, that's after I get a couple of certifications and see if I can pass their tests. But they change all the time.
Yeah, good luck.
Google was at scale as well. They were recruiting pretty heavily.
Well, that's good. That is good.
Yeah, there's Google and Novell. I'm trying to think. Sun, going down the list in my head. Trolltech was there. KDE, Red Hat. That's how I found out about the Red Hat Summit. Gosh, trying to think now. IBM, yeah, there's a bunch of lugs. I'm trying to remember all the names of the companies. Ah!
Yeah, we were at the Ohio Linux Fest in last September, and that was a real community event. We really liked that show a lot in Columbus.
It was really cool to sitting at one of the computers typing in a piece of the article, and this guy's sitting next to me, and I'm like, "Hey, why are you here?" And he's like, "I've only been using, you know, Linux off a live CD for a couple of months, and you know, I'm tired of Windows taking my music with it every time it bombs." And, you know, he was here to get some information on how to install it on his computer. And I was just like, that's why this is a good event, because somebody like him can come there. And I remember being in that position where I'd only been using Fedora Core 1 for a couple of months and could browse the internet. That's what I could do, you know. And he can come to a place like that where it's not much to get in and can talk to some people who know what they're doing.
I see you just posted an article, Scott, about an introduction to Linux workshop at CompUSA in Edison, New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. I mean, when you can actually get someone to put on a workshop at a, you know, like CompUSA, which is where the most, you know, most people think that, you know, that's a computer store. That's where you go to get computers. That's where most, a lot of people go. And you can get a place that's all Windows and a touch of Mac to actually put on something about Linux. That's impressive. And it's little things like that that we're starting to hear about, you know. They, I posted an article about there's going to be 50,000 more desktops running Linux in, I believe it's Brazil.
That's a pretty massive rollout.
Yeah. 50,000 more people. That's why I like the idea of KDE being able to run on Mac and Windows, because you get somebody who just has all the regular programs for their computer. But, hey, here's another way your computer can look, and it comes with hundreds, thousands of programs that are as robust or more than any program you've used before, because it doesn't crash as much, and it's 10 times as safe. And all of a sudden it's like, why am I running Windows? Why am I, you know, running KDE on Windows when I can just run Linux on, you know, KDE on Linux, and it'll look exactly the same? So you get people hooked.
Scott, just the thing, when you say KDE running on Windows, they're porting the applications to Windows, not the desktop itself, as far as I know.
Even just, yeah, my very first open source application was, I think, Firefox 0.8.
Yeah.
I started using that instead of IE 5.5 or 6 that was out at the time. And then I started using Thunderbird, and I decided to go to the store and buy Linux for non-geeks for $20 and came home with an operating system. If you get 10,000 people like me, that's 10,000 more people who are using open source software. That's 10,000 more people at linuxquestions.org or, you know, talking about Linux. It's all about the murmurs in the corners. That's where we are. In 20 years, we're gonna be the old schoolers going, I remember when nobody talked about it.
You know, we'll get those 50,000 in Brazil. Those 10,000 people you're talking about will still only have 2% of the market, or at least that's right. What they'll say.
Well, from what I remember reading somewhere, there's probably more people running Linux than there are Mac right now. That's for the fact that the hardware, you know, buying a Mac costs so much. I'd love to get a little Mac Mini, that little thing for $600. I'd own it. Why not? It's actually affordable.
Affordable. I got it.
Did I lose you guys?
Free.
No, you didn't lose us. We were listening to what you were saying. Yeah, it is.
See, I have no scruples when it comes to computing. I'm not big. I mean, I love Linux, but you know, if Mac is finally going to take themselves out of the realm of the luxury PC. And they're really worth it. Those programs are nice. When you can create my sister created a family website page in 10 minutes, and I practically watched her do it.
You could do the same thing on MySpace.com.
but I have a MySpace page, and it's fun to see what happens on there. Half the time, the darn website doesn't load, but I guess that's probably to my benefit.
You should check out the TLLTS MySpace webpage on MySpace. Just make sure you put sunglasses on before you go to it.
Yeah, I've been there. You guys have some fun pictures. I don't know what the one guy is doing with his mouth open, but I'm just going to not talk about it anymore.
That'd be Dan.
Is that Dan? Yeah, I'm like, wow, that's great.
Bent
sure.
Over with his mouth open, right? Yeah.
Hoagie guy.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, it's like he lost the battery.
Yeah, and that was the line right next to him.
Yep. Oh, man. Go listen to episode 37. Hilarious.
It's getting late. I think we're going to wrap it up soon.
Well, thanks for having me on, guys.
Thank
really
you for coming on, Scott. Great job.
Scott, you're more than welcome to come back again, man.
Excellent. Thank you. You guys have a great
nice
night.
Nice talking to you.
You too.
Take care.
Bye.
Pat, this song is not in your music folder directory.
Maybe I stuck it in the www folder?
Let me check.
Let me see.
yeah, there it is.
There it is. Sorry about that. No! Oh! I figure we play a BSD song. The BSD, OpenBSD project, what they do is with every version release, they have a song that goes along with it. In fact, Will interviewed the guy who does the music and the artwork that accompanies it.
Yeah, they have like a theme for every release, for example, 3.9 Focus.
Yeah, and they have like a little cartoon character and a whole thing to it. It's pretty funny.
Those things are hilarious, man.
So this one, I think, is Ponderosa Puff, it's called.
Yeah, it was the OpenBSD 3.6 release song, which is like a few years ago. But still, I think it's pretty good, actually.
You guys have anything else to say before we wrap it up?
No.
Well, if you're using OpenSSH, go donate a few bucks to the OpenBSD project, because they're a small project, and, doing what they do actually does cost money to do, so I prefer paying for free software than something that I can, and get something that I can actually use for a lot of things, and check out the source code for, instead of getting something like just a black box that I can't check out myself.
Awesome.
Yeah.
T, I'm going to have to cut you off to play this music, so I want to thank you for coming on.
Okay, could you wait like two seconds playing it then, because I can hop on the stream.
Yes, I will wait a couple seconds, all right?
Okay.
Talk to you in a bit.
Before we jump off, UbuntuCon is coming up this weekend in New York City. I think the last day to register is tomorrow, so I would go register tonight, possibly, if you're going to go to that. That's at the Google offices in New York City.
Okay.
And that's it for me.
That's it for me, man. Have a good night, everybody.
And
play us out, Dan.
I will play us out. Hold on, let me bring it up. What is
Ponderosa Puff, this is called.
And who's it by again? So we give proper attribution?
I know. It's on the BSD license.
Okay. I should have given T enough time to get back on, so here it is. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Next week, we have JTS Moore from Revolution OS. Remember, don't go watch it on Google Video or download it from Google Video. Go out and buy a copy.
That's right. Next week is 180.
Yep.
Woo-hoo. Woo-hoo.
And
that is yours.
Yeah, we'll see you later.
Good night.
Nothing to his name but a code and a dream. Looking for the legendary inland sea where the water was deep and clean and free. But the town he found had suffered a blow. Fish were dying because the water was low. Fat catfish named a Diamond Dolls plugged the stream with copyright laws. He said, my water's good and my water's free, so Ponderosa, you're gonna thank me. Then he bottled it up and he labeled it mine. They opened and poured, but they ran out of time. So Puff made a brand and he tanned his hide. Said, this is the mark of too much pride. Tied to a horse, set the tail on fire. Slapped her on the ass and the water went higher. Ponderosa Puff wouldn't take no guff. Water ought to be clean and free. So he fought the fight and he set things right with his open BSD. Well, things were good for a spell in town, but then one day dang water turned brown. Coming to the rescue, Mayor Reed, he said, this here filter's all y'all need. But it didn't take long for the filter plug, full of mud and crud and bugs. Bull said, gotta be a gooder way. Mayor said, hell no, she's okay. The water's fine on the open range, and he passed a law that it couldn't change. No freeze, no boil, no frolicking young. Puff took him aside, said, this is wrong. And then he found the mayor was sat in the crutch, so he took him down in a cloud of blood. He said mayors learned he's done been mean, so they did it right, and the water went clean. That Ponderosa Bluff wouldn't take no guff. Water ought to be clean and free. So he fought the fight and he set things right with his open PSP. So once again, it was right but then the lake went dry, she was gone again. Fish started flipping and flopping about, yelling, "Mercy, pup, it's a doggone drought." So he rolled up gulch till he hit the lake of Apache fish, they was on the take. They built a dam that was made of rules. Now pup was pissed and he lost his cool. I'm sick and tired of these gall darn words and laws and bureaucratic nerds. You're full of beans and killing my town. And if you all don't shut her down, well, I'll hang a licking on everyone. Sons of bitch and greedy scum. So he blew the dam, let her haul, cause water ought to be free for all. That Ponderosa Bluff wouldn't take no guff. Water ought to be clean and free. So he fought the fight and he set things right with his open BST. With his open BST. That's right.
So we can paint anything we want?
Anything at all.
How about if I paint your fine ass? Yeah, with my tongue brush. Shut up. Just shut up. It's over.